Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Liverpool winning the title is 1,000 times worse than City winning the title. No expectations at all on Ten Hag. He can do whatever the hell he wants. Marcelo Bielsa is the most overrated manager in football. Every 3 years, some team comes up from the Championship and you go, who? Bloody hell, good on them. And then they go right back down again. It's just Leeds lasted one extra season. Oh, well, Christ alive, let's put it up with walking on water and feeding the 5,000. Fuck off.
Hello, hello, and welcome to episode 22 of Comedians Talking About Football. It's a Manchester United episode, but you'll be pleased to know that today's guest, this Red Devils fan, actually lives north of London. What a lovely change to the podcast. Today's guest is a comedian, obviously, and he's also co-host of the Dead Man Talking podcast that he does with Rob Mulholland. Rob Mulholland, of course, being a Leeds United fan. And of course, today's guest isn't going to mention anything to do with Leeds at any point in this episode. So the comedian talking about football this week is Freddie Quinn. I'm a huge fan of Freddie's. I was thrilled to get him on the podcast. We couldn't meet in person, but we did manage to record a little bit earlier in the year via Zoom. And those of you who saw his latest appearance on Good Morning Britain won't be surprised to hear that we embraced modern technology to record this podcast. So without further ado, this is Freddie Quinn talking Manchester United.
Football, at the end of the day, football, it's a funny old game, comedians talking about football,
comedians talking about football,
comedians talking about football.
Freddie, thanks for joining me, mate. How are you doing?
It is a pleasure to be part of this. I didn't think Zoom podcasts were a thing anymore. Look at you, rocking it like it's 2020.
Yeah, still going. Well, we'll get onto the subject of your podcast later on, Dead Men Talking, because that's going very, very well. There's a couple of reasons I want to mention that podcast, because, well, one, it's very good. And two, I was very surprised to see you recording it with Rob Mulholland. I only really know you and Rob Mulholland from your various debates, shall we say, in a private Facebook group that we're all in.
Oh, yeah. I mean, look, we're mates. It's just for the 90 minutes that his team's playing football, I want nothing but the worst for him and for all of his friends and family. And I want nothing but pain and misery. Look, some of my best mates are Liverpool fans. Like, do I love them as people? Absolutely. I'm going to one of their weddings on Saturday. Do you know what I mean? Like I love them deeply as people. But if there was some sort of, let's say, attack at Anfield, do you know what I mean? I wouldn't be that arsed.
Oh, well,
Freddie, we are here today to talk about Manchester United, your team. I'm going to start the podcast as we do with our usual. Well, we start with some quick fire questions. Some of them we ask all guests, and some of them are suited particularly for you. So our first question is, you support Manchester United. Are they or are they not your local team?
Right. Okay. Do you know what? I almost knew that this question was going to come up because it's a question that gets reserved solely for Manchester United fans and nobody else. They're not my local team. Why does that matter?
Well, it doesn't particularly matter. We do ask that to all guests.
Oh, yeah.
Although I will say, with our two Manchester United fans we've had on so far, one was Dan Fitzhenry, who lives in Exeter, and one is Mike Fenton-Stevens, legendary comedy actor, lives in Kent. So can you beat those two to being closer to Old Trafford?
Yeah, so I Preston in it. So, I mean, I'm less than an hour away.
There you go. Already better than our last two. So there we go.
We're in spitting distance of Old Trafford.
Okay, next question. Club over country, yes or no?
Yes.
Right. Okay, Cantona, Giggs, Rooney or Ronaldo? You can only pick one of them to be in their prime for next season. Who do you pick?
Wow, that is a question. Right, Cantona, Giggs, Rooney or Ronaldo in the prime for next season? Ronaldo. So the reason being is prime Cantona operated more as a number 10, and we've already got Bruno Fernandes. Prime Giggs was good. Good player. But the thing with Giggs, it's like, it's not like he had one outstanding season. He had like 15 really very good seasons. But whereas Ronaldo, there was that one season where he scored like 42 goals. Do you know what I mean? So I'm saying prime Ronaldo.
Prime Ronaldo. Okay, right. If you could beat these teams on the double next year, so home and away, would you rather beat Liverpool home and away or Man City home and away?
Liverpool.
Who's it worse to see lift the title? Man City or Liverpool? There we go.
There's no United fan that exists that think it's worse for City. No United fan. You won't find one in the world, anywhere, that follows United. Liverpool winning the title is 1,000 times worse than City winning the title.
Do you think it's worse maybe for younger fans now who only know Man City as the top team that they are?
I don't know what you mean by that, Rick. It's the reason being is because the reason that City are in the place that they are in is because they've bought it. Mm. That's the whole reason, is that, you know, they've won the lottery, you know, they've bought their success. And that's why they are the way they are. And you won't find a city. I'm not saying that in a disparaging way, like it makes it worse or anything, but it makes it easier for me to accept as a United fan. Of course, City are at the top of world football. They have spent 400 million quid on defenders alone in a couple of years, you know? Whereas with Liverpool, it's more difficult to accept because there's a shrewdness about their business.
Final question. And as I said, some of these questions are something we ask every guest. Some of them are particularly picked for whoever I'm interviewing for an episode. So I'll let you guess what you think about this question. Bielsa, what do you rate him as a manager?
Marcelo Bielsa is the most overrated manager in football. He genuinely is. Do you know what? I was looking through Twitter today, tearing my bloody, what's left of my hair out. Because obviously Leeds are back into a relegation fight and people can't distance Bielsa from it quickly enough. Oh, the one guy, the miracle. This is what literally the words, the miracle that Bielsa performed in getting Leeds to the Premiership. It's like, it's not a miracle at all. That's not a miracle. Eddie Howe did it with Bournemouth. Bloody Wagner did it with Huddersfield. It's a miracle that happens every 3 years. Every 3 years, some team comes up in the Championship and you go, who? Bloody hell, good on them. And then they go right back down again. Mm. It's just Leeds lasted one extra season. Oh, well, Christ alive, let's put it up with walking on water and feeding the 5,000. Fuck off.
I mean, although there's a bit of a rivalry there with Man United and Leeds.
No, there isn't. There's no rivalry with Manchester United and Leeds. Leeds think there's a rivalry between Manchester United and Leeds, but there isn't, because they've been so much. There was a rivalry between Manchester United and Leeds in the year 2000, when Leeds were a club that could get European football and a club that could, you know, knock you out of the cup. They could win a cup competition. Then there was a rivalry. Ever since, you know, the last 20 odd years, the rivalry's only been one way.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, well, one, they've never faced each other in the league in about 20 years because of where they were. They were in the Championship and people seem to have written off the fact that, because there's this big talk at the moment as we record this about Everton being the biggest team to have ever dropped out of the top flight. People are saying, no, Leeds in 2004, that was bigger.
I think this whole big club thing is one of the most boring debates that you can have with football, because every fan thinks that their club is a big club.
Yeah.
And you're not all big clubs. Everton, I'm sorry, I don't think they're a big club. What they're a big club because they won something in the 80s? Oh, well done. Fantastic. Great. You won things 20 years before the internet was a thing. Congratulations. Well done. Like, I'm not sure why they think that they're massive. I think what it is the fall from grace is massive.
Yeah.
So look, when Leeds got relegated, there was writing on the wall that they were already fucked. Financially, they were fucked. The club was a mess at the higher levels and stuff. I get it. But if Everton go down, they'll have gone from Ancelotti to the Championship in 12 months. And Ancelotti's managing Real Madrid. So Ancelotti's not the problem. It's the fall from grace that club has had in the last 12 months is rapid. For me personally, I either or Everton or Leeds would be hilarious. Well, who do you support?
Reading.
Oh, right. Okay. What, Paul Ince at the moment?
Yeah, well, at the moment, yeah. Probably something to do with the fact Tom Ince is with us at the moment. So I don't know whether we just...
ring your dad. Ring your dad, see if he's free.
It is like that. When I was playing for a team that's, you know, when I was younger, like I think one week the coach got ill. So they went, Sam, can your dad come down and just coach us next week? It's that sort of thing, really. And wow. So, yeah. So,
you know, whose dad doesn't look like he has friends? Sam's dad. Sam's dad won't have a social life.
He won't be busy.
I don't like Paul Ince. I think he's knob.
Because he played at United for a while.
Yes, he did. Yeah, the governor. Yeah, and we got fucking battered 4-0 at the Nou Camp by Barcelona because the governor decided that he knew better than Ferguson and just did whatever the fuck he wanted on the pitch, and that was the end of him after that.
So Manchester United, where did it all start for you, Freddie? What's your earliest memories of supporting the club?
Well, I mean, I was... my dad's a Man United fan, and my dad would watch football with me and obviously watch United, and so I just grew up watching United games, and that's sort of where it started. I remember getting tickets, you know, my dad had sort of blagged tickets and have, you know, little sort of contacts and stuff. So, you know, when I was, you know, 10, 11, 12, 13, I was going to European nights and stuff like that. And yeah, I think it's natural to grow up supporting whichever club your dad supports.
Yeah, I think that's true. And also, I suppose, like you said, did you grow up in Preston? That was...
Yeah. Preston at the time, in like the third division, they were fucking dreadful.
And so I suppose it makes sense, you know, I'd count them as a local team, certainly. So who were the players who were around when you started going to games?
Well, it was, it was pretty much class of 92, to be honest with you. Coming through, because, I mean, I was born in 88. And so when I was that age, they were just, you know, starting to, you know, your likes of your Scholes and your Beckhams and your, you know, Gary Nevilles and whatnot. You know, it's Giggs and that, you know, Nicky Butt, you know, that sort of... I mean, I remember having a Man United calendar as well. And I remember having a Ryan Giggs poster as well that, now I look back on it, was probably meant for women. like it was more of a... It wasn't Giggs scoring a great goal. It was more, hey, he's quite a good-looking lad, isn't he? But...
Oh, I love that. I was born the same year as you, and I have the same memories of that team. I do think where you grew up really benefits you there, because I one of my sort of earliest memories of football, I got into football a little bit late, I guess. And so I really got into it around the 98-99 season, the treble winning season.
Okay, yeah.
Very, very, I mean, even as a, I think any football fan will remember that well. And I just remember, you know, getting really into football then, making sure I watched the Champions League games, obviously all on the telly, any Premier League game I could. And then it was at the end of that, my dad decided, you know, he likes the, you know, he likes Beckham and Giggs and Solskjaer. So I think now's a good time to take him to what was then Division Three Reading.
He likes Beckham, he likes Solskjaer, he likes Giggs. So I'm sure he'll like the Majewski Stadium. Fucking hell.
What could have been? So I guess one of your earliest memories would have been that treble winning season as well.
Yeah, that's probably the first time I watched. It's probably the first time I can remember watching a game and remembering the game the whole way through. Mm. So I think that when you grow up watching United and watching football and stuff, and you watch it, but to have those sort of concrete memories, like you can remember, you know, exactly how the match went. You can remember where you were, who you were with, whereabouts in your house you were watching it or whatever. Yeah, that was. I mean, I remember that was the first game, I think, I was watching it and I was stood up. And obviously, you know, 1-0 down. I remember just sort of having every ounce of my being sort of wishing and willing United on. And then when they ended up winning, I honestly thought it was like a miracle at that age. You know, and you think that, oh, well, there's something magical in wanting something so much that it happens.
I know what you mean. It was almost like a movie, like a really good film, or you know. And I suppose there was a feeling after that. I think I went off football a little bit after that, maybe because my dad started taking me to Reading games, but also because I think I thought, why aren't all football games like this? It was so brilliant. It was such an amazing final 2 minutes of that game. Incredible, incredible.
I can remember the players as well, like the Bayern Munich players, Matthias Sammer and Oliver Kahn and Vicente Lizarazu just bashing the ground. And, oh, mate, I can remember how much pain it was for them. And that seemed to make it even better. I think even as a child, I was a weird sociopath.
I love the story as well that, you know, as they scored that equaliser, you know, I think it wasn't Brian Kidd. That was Steve McLaren, of course, was the assistant manager. And he started getting all the bench warmed up. And apparently Ferguson turned to them and said, no, sit down. We're not taking this into extra time. We're going to get a winner here. I think that's incredible. I mean, let's talk about Ferguson for a little bit, because obviously your earliest memories would have been the team under Alex Ferguson. As you got into football and you got older, he would have been there for, you know, there was rumours at the time he was going to retire after the treble winning season. But he obviously stayed all the way up until 2013. What was it like for you as a fan when he left?
I sort of remember being a bit in shock and sort of big. Because the thing is when you grow up supporting United, the one thing that you never think about is the manager. You just, because that's the one constant of the club. That's the one thing that never changes. So I remember sort of feeling like, oh, we have to sort of worry about who our manager is now. And it's a bit of a weird time. It almost sort of brought you back down to earth. It very much did feel like it was the closing of a chapter on United's history. And I remember chatting to a Liverpool mate of mine who said that that's it. He said, that's it for United now. He said, you'll always come close, but you won't get there. And you'll come to learn eventually that it's the hope that kills you. And so eventually, one day, you'll just stop hoping. And I remember thinking at the time, what a load of bollocks. And now, nearly 10 years later, I'm like, fuck me, he was right.
What were your thoughts when they brought in David Moyes? Was it disappointing for you? Did you have faith in him? And what about the managers who came after?
I had total faith in David Moyes. I think The problem wasn't necessarily him. The problem was that it was a wholesale regime change. So, you know, David Gill went as well. And so we had, you know, all new sort of board and stuff. There was talk, well, I say talk. Ferguson famously left left David Moyes a present in the form of Thiago, who was ready to sign for United. He was 23 years old at the time. I mean, he's one of the best midfielders in the world at the moment, and he has been consistently for the last Christ knows how long. David Moyes decided that he wanted Mauro Fellaini instead because he'd worked with him. And I think that was a very bitter and prophetic sort of microcosm of what was to come.
Was he given enough time, Moyes? Because, I mean, it's one of those funny things now where he had a season at West Ham, was a little bit hit and miss, and then they went elsewhere, brought him back in, and they gave him time on his second run, which a lot of managers wouldn't get, to be fair. And he now seems to be doing well with what he's got at West Ham. Do you think another season might have got something out of them?
No. Look, the thing that United didn't realise at the time, because we'd never had to change managers before, there's a world of difference between managing a team where the expectation is to go out and win every game and managing a team where the expectation is to not get beat.
Mm.
There's a world of difference there. So with United, you have to, or with United at the time, the expectation was that we'd go out and we'd take the game to teams. Bear in mind, this was a team, United, that had won the league by 12 points, you know, in 2012. Champions League finalists in 2011. This was one of the best teams in the world. David Moyes coming from a team who were fifth, sixth every year, you know, who could afford to sort of sit off the gas against teams that were better than them or teams where they were away. You can never afford to do that at United. It's a completely different tactical profile. And I think the mistake wasn't necessarily, well, the mistake was, one of the mistakes was bringing Moyes in. But I think another mistake was sort of not realising that there's a difference between managing a club where the expectation is to win every game and managing a club where, you know, the expectations are different.
Yeah, because I've seen a few people. The reason I brought that up is that with where he's got West Ham at the moment in the semi-finals of the Europa League, a lot of people are saying, oh, wow, you know, he really was sacked by United too early. And you think, well, maybe now a Europa League semi-final would be quite good fun for Man United. But back then, the expectation was to win the title and to win the Champions League.
Sure. I mean, here's the thing as well, though, is there a team, apart from maybe the bottom three, is there a team that West Ham wouldn't be able to sort of sit off against? Like, they just wouldn't, like, their fans just wouldn't accept it?
No, I don't think so. I wouldn't say so, no. Whereas at Man United, he was expected big things, totally. Very big things.
If West Ham have got Crystal Palace away, then they can put eight men behind the ball and hit them on the break, and West Ham fans will be happy with that if they get a result. Do you know what I mean? Whereas with United, you can't go defensively away against Brighton. You just can't do that. So it's a different expectation.
Did you have in your mind who you think should have come in after Ferguson left? I know there was a lot of talk for many years about Mourinho coming in. So I suppose my two questions there. One is, who did you want to come in? And with all the chat and the rumours about Mourinho being the ultimate successor, what would you make of his time at the club?
So, I mean, you've missed Van Gaal out of those two. I would have loved for Klopp to have come. But obviously that didn't work out, did it? And where is he now? I think ultimately that most managers that were going to come after Ferguson were going to be doomed to fail, because what we did is we didn't just change the manager. We changed all the coaching staff. Mike Phelan left. René Meulensteen left. We changed all the board. It was a wholesale change of the club. Mm-hmm. Which in retrospect wasn't helpful. What we should have done is we should have just changed the manager and retained the key aspects of the club. I think that whole stripping out was a problem. In terms of Mourinho's time at the club, Do you know what? It's funny because a lot of the things that Mourinho didn't said at the time, he was pillared for. And now he's turning out to be totally right. Mourinho told us that Luke Shaw wasn't good enough. He's not. Mourinho told us that Paul Pogba would let us down. He has. Mourinho told us that Rashford wasn't capable. And at the time, we couldn't see it. Mm. But now, a few years later, he has been, for all Mourinho's pluses and minuses, he was incredibly right about his assessment of the team.
So new season coming up, new manager. What do you think are the key changes he's going to need to bring in, both on and off the pitch? Good question.
So already the key changes have started, really, for me. So in terms of clearing out the scouting team, all gone. Matt Judge has gone. You know, it's a total clear out at board level. The first thing that he needs to do is completely overhaul scouting and the way that we profile and look for players. I think that for all the money United have spent, you can only really argue that maybe one player has really improved the squad since they came in, and that was Bruno Fernandes. And even him, to be honest with you, to the back end of this season, has gone off the boil massively. Whereas you look at your teams like Liverpool and your teams like City, who are, you know, the leaders at the moment, I can't think of a bad signing that they've made in years. I can't think of one that hasn't improved the team or that wasn't worth the money. And I think recruitment's so important, and we've got it so wrong, that the first thing that he needs to do is to sort of overhaul that and have everyone singing from the same hymn sheet. I think the key thing with Ten Hag, really, is that we have to see this as a long-term appointment. We just have to. Regardless of what happens, whether or not he comes in and he's amazing, or whether or not he bloody pushes us down to 12th, we have to see this as he's got 5 years to rebuild this club, because we've tried the short fixes, and all that's happened is that we've found ourselves further away from, you know, the historic big rivals. In terms of what he needs to do in terms of the squad, the culture at the club is very toxic at the moment. McTominay's come out and said that. Jesse Lingard's come out and said that. The dressing room's completely broken, and I think he'll need to go a long way in terms of mending it. Bringing new players in, I think that you could argue that we could bring in a new player for everybody apart from De Gea, Varane, Bruno and Sancho. I think everybody else, and I include Ronaldo in that, I think everyone else potentially is upgradable. So the scale of the rebuild is astronomical. Probably one of the biggest in terms of rebuilds, probably, I would say, one of the biggest jobs has ever been in football.
Mm. Yeah, I agree. And I want to talk about two players in particular from the game just gone. And that is, sorry, from the season that's just gone. And first and foremost, I want to talk about Sancho. Has he been given a real chance this season, do you think?
Sancho has been one of our better players, to be honest with you, this season. However, he has suffered massively from really poor form of his teammates, plus also having two of, I would argue, the worst fullbacks around at elite level clubs to sort of provide him with that width and stuff. So he's doing all that on his own. I think he's shown flashes of absolute brilliance, and I think under a Ten Hag system, he'll absolutely thrive. He's a really good player. He is worth 73 million quid, but he's coming as a 21-year-old lad to a club that is on fire. He's not going to fix it himself.
And the other player I wanted to talk to you about is, how do you solve a problem like Maguire? Where is it all going?
You get rid of him.
I mean, the thing about Maguire, which I find strange, is that he had a bit of a struggle when he arrived at the club. You know, that's fair enough. And then I felt he had a really good Euros. I felt in the Euros he He did very, very well.
He did, but you have to remember that you have to remember that England play a very different system to United. And Maguire's main weakness is that he's incredibly slow. He's astronomically, he's very, very slow, which is why he likes to play off the front foot so much and try and win the ball high up and early. And if you're playing, I mean, in the Euros, we played a narrow back three of sort of like a 3-4-3, if you like, of Stones, Maguire and Kyle Walker. Now, Kyle Walker is one of the fastest, most athletic players in football at the moment, not just in the England team. And I think that that allowed Maguire to sort of, you know, it kind of papered over the cracks of Maguire, of Maguire's physical limitations. But at United, you know, Telles isn't particularly quick. Wan-Bissaka's not particularly quick. Varane's pretty fast, but he keeps getting himself injured and stuff. Lindelof's not rapid, and Eric Bailly's absolutely mental. There's no one to sort of paper over the cracks of his deficiencies. United want to play a high line like all the teams do to try and compress the pitch and stuff. But if you play a high line against any team with a brain, they're just going to lob balls over the top of Maguire's head and watch him sort of. He's just not tactically set out to play elite football at club level when they play high lines. He's just not. If you put Maguire in a team like, do you know what, I was going to say Leicester then. What an Harry that would be. Tell you what, stick with the West Ham theme. If Maguire was at West Ham, he'd look great because he'd sit on the edge of his box and he'd head balls away all day. But when you are required to defend higher up the pitch, you just can't do that. Now it's a shame, really, because he used to be so comfortable on the ball, but it honestly looks like his confidence has so completely deteriorated to the point now where he's a total liability. And of course, teams take advantage of that because they aggressively press him more than they would. And that just, you know, it becomes a self-fulfilling cycle because he makes more mistakes, he gets pressed more, he makes more mistakes, he gets pressed more, you know.
You made a really good point there, Freddie, I think, about it being one of the biggest jobs in football next season, the rebuild. Being honest, what is your realistic expectations for next season?
None. Zero. Zilch. I'm trying to get this across to as many United fans as I can. No expectations for 3 years. Nothing. Let him do, as long as he doesn't relegate us, let him do whatever he wants. Because he has to have that time to do what he wants. And if we finish 10th, I don't care. I literally don't care. Because at the moment, all that's stopping us from finishing 10th it doesn't make a difference to me if we finish 10th next season or in 3 seasons' time. Do you know what I mean? And we're going down that downward trajectory at the moment. So I'd rather bring somebody in, and if he messes it up, he messes it up, but knowing that we're there for long term.
Talk a little bit about comedy, Freddie. In particular, I want to talk about the podcast that you started not too long ago with Rob Mulholland, who's a big Leeds fan, Dead Men Talking. It seems to be doing very, very well.
Yeah, we're going quite well at the moment. I think the key behind it really is that there isn't really any other podcast like it at the moment, in that we are very much embracing filth and offensiveness with both hands and just seeing where it goes.
Yeah, I've really enjoyed it. I've listened to a couple of episodes myself. Yeah, it's really good fun. And then with your comedy as well, you mean, I've seen quite a lot of your stuff. We've never actually gigged together, but I've seen a lot of it because you're quite prominent on social media, Instagram, TikTok especially. How long have you been gigging? Where did it all start for you?
So I did my first gig in the 3rd of March 2007 at Beat the Frog, and I won the competition or whatever, and I remember thinking, this is great. And somebody came up to me afterwards and they said, hey, you're good kid, do you want to do my gig in Withington just out of Manchester on the Wednesday? 10 minutes. And I was like, yeah, sure. I didn't have the money to sort of go to Preston and back again. So I slept on my friend's floor in his dorm for 3 days. And then I did the gig and it was to 6 people in Withington. It was fucking shit. It was dreadful. And in my head, I genuinely thought, like, well, you do Beat the Frog on Monday, you do Withington on the Wednesday, a week on Saturday be live at the Apollo, the tour will be in the autumn. Yeah, you know. And it's funny, really, I did comedy maybe, I did about 20 gigs over the course of the next year, trying to figure it out. And sometimes I'd go great, sometimes I'd go dreadful. But I was really young, I was like 18, and I just it was weird. I'd kind of stumbled on comedy by accident, but I knew that it was something that I wanted to do from the moment that I did it. But I just knew that I wasn't sort of mature enough mentally. So I left and I had a couple of years break. And then I started again in June 2010. And when I had a couple of years break, I came back and I was like, yeah, I know. I this was a much better idea. And, you know, during that time, I'd got a job, you know, I'd dropped out of uni, you know, I'd had a long-term relationship and that had gone tits up. And I had more adult experiences, you know, and so I could talk about that more on stage. And instantly that made the world a difference. Yeah, and I've been doing it ever since.
That's a long old time then from your first gigs. If you go 2007, you must have only been, what, 18, 19 then when you first took the stage?
I was literally 18 years old and I was like a young 18 as well, I think. Like really sort of green, you know, live with my mum, you know, very sort of like didn't really have any life experiences or anything. And I noticed, I mean, I was maybe 1 in 6 gigs would go well. And then the rest, 2 or 3 out of the 6 would go there. And then a couple would be real fucking stinkers. And the thing is I've always enjoyed sort of ruder comedy, as it were, and like pushing the buttons and stuff. And so some of the stuff that I did and said, I remember doing one gig and I tried a bit of new material. And I can't believe I thought that this was funny or ever going to work. But it was about learning that 1 in 3 people get cancer. And it was like, but 2 out of 3 don't. Surely they should lead with that, make us feel good about it or whatever. And I honestly don't know what part of that I thought was funny. But I remember it really upsetting some people and the promoter saying, you need to leave because there's a couple of guys that want to kick your head in. And I remember leaving the gig and seeing these two massive blokes and thinking, fuck. And so I left the gig and I put a limp on. put a fake little limp on. Like, well, they wouldn't beat a crippled child, surely.
I'm really interested to hear your fantasy five-a-side Manchester United team. Now, of course, as always, it isn't just we don't want the best players. We don't want necessarily the Man United legends. I want 5 players that mean something to you. And this team will hopefully, we think, end up being a bit of a kind of a cult five-a-side Manchester United squad. So who have you got in your team?
I'm going with 5 players that have pissed me off watching them more than anyone else. So 5 players who watching them as a United fan has made me want to reach out into the TV and just strangle these people to death. So the goalkeeper is Fabian Barthez.
Oh, of course.
Who was just... is off his tits. It was like he'd get bored and just it's like, Fabian, you're here for an hour and a half. Just suck it up. Do you know what I mean? I remember watching United against Deportivo La Coruña in the Champions League, I believe round of 16, and we got knocked out of that tie because he just lost his shit. He went full Manuel Neuer before Manuel Neuer was a thing. He was just off his tits. Absolutely. And he'd do weird things as well. He'd lob like he'd lob strikers that were coming up to him to try and dispossess him and stuff. He'd be like, there's no need, Fabian. There's absolutely no need. Yeah, capable of some incredible stuff. But honestly, the one thing you want as a keeper is for them not to be fucking crazy. The one thing you want is just dependable, reliable. Don't give me a heart attack. And he was the opposite of that.
It was a strange one with Barthez because, I mean, when Schmeichel left, it felt like there wasn't a big name to replace him. I mean, my memory was obviously that I think it was Mark Bosnich came in for a while. There was, I think, Roy Carroll. And also there was another player, I can't remember his name, but he just was sort of only known in his history at Man United for letting the ball go between his legs. He was wearing joggers or something. Oh,
Massimo Taibbi.
That's it. That's the name. I thought it was Taibbi, something like that.
Yeah, we got over like $1 million and he played twice. I think as well, Tim Howard was playing for us around that time as well.
Of course, yeah, Tim Howard, I forget that. And then, so then when Barthez came in, it was like, right, at last, a world-class keeper coming in.
I actually think Barthez was before Tim Howard and Roy Carroll. If my memory serves, it went Schmeichel and then pretty much Barthez. But I'd love to know if there was anyone in between. I can't think.
If it was, it was probably just that Tiabi, someone like that. But it was. It seemed like it was at last a decent replacement for Schmeichel. And it was just, I mean, there's, I'm not saying he's known, you know, in the history of football, he is a good keeper. He's remembered as a great keeper. But they're just endless videos of him with howlers, him coming out the time he called offside and just stood there and allowed them to carry on playing and score. He was a bizarre player. You're absolutely right. And that's an excellent first pick for your team. So that's your goalkeeper coming. Who else we got in there?
Yeah, so he. I mean, I had to check them because it was driving me insane. He was signed as a replacement for Peter Schmeichel. He was part of the World Cup winning side in 1998.
Yeah, for France.
So he was signed as a replacement. Do you know what? To be honest with you, there's a lot of Schmeichel-esque qualities about him in that he was kind of off his tits, you know. So our one defender in this five-a-side team is Alexander Butner.
Oh, okay. It's not a name I've not heard for a long time.
But so we bought him off some Dutch team. Do you know what I mean?
Mm.
And he genuinely looked like he had won a competition to be there. I think he came from Vitesse, but he came, I believe, under the Van Gaal era. And I honestly, knowing United as I know in terms of how they recruit them, I honestly think that somebody thought, well, he's Dutch. And then that was as much as they thought. He was absolutely fucking dreadful. He was dreadful. I honestly don't think that he even realised that he was playing for United. He was meant to go to Southampton, but then we came in at the last minute and took him. No idea.
Yeah, I mean, that's a name genuinely I would have forgotten. So that's who you're relying your whole defence on, Alexander.
That's who I'm relying my whole defence on. Because I've never, like, he's one of those players who, in my life, you watch him and you're so... It's sort of like watching him as a player is sort of like when you watch a puppy do a shit on a rug. In that there's blinding anger, but at the same time you go, well, he doesn't know any better. And it's so rare that I've ever sort of had that with you. Usually United sign players and you go, well, he's just shit. Every once in a while you'll get yourself a Gabriel Obertan or something like that. But it's a rarity. And I can't think of many more defenders that we had up until that point that were just unfathomably shit. And I've no idea why we signed them.
It was such a weird time as well, because it was the Louis van Gaal era. That was kind of when he was trying to rebuild the squad, bringing in some quite big names. They might have been past it at that point, but start certainly bringing in names. And that was a strange one. I don't remember seeing him play much, but man, that was crazy.
Look at who. So he played he had 13 appearances for United in 2 years, right? 13 appearances. Oh, no, sorry. He had in all competitions, 13 league appearances, 28 in all competitions in 2 years, right? Now, look at the other teams that he's played for. He played for Vitesse, United, Dynamo Moscow, Anderlecht, Vitesse again, and now he plays for RKC Walwick. I don't even know what the hell that is.
Blimey. Oh, what a name. What a name. So that's Alexander Butner then, who is on his own taking care of your whole defence.
Well, we got Barthez in there as well, so he'll probably help out with a sweeper-keeper responsibility. Yeah. Anchoring the midfield is Anderson.
Oh, okay. Right. Now, Anderson's an interesting one because so he was part of, again, a very well-remembered squad from the... now, correct me if I'm wrong, but he was part of that 2008 squad, wasn't he? Champions League and Premier League title winning.
Yes. Yeah. In fact, I would think that he'd be part of the 2009 finalists and the 2011 finalists as well. I don't think he left till Van Gaal came in.
Right. Okay.
I'd have to check. And the reason that I want Anderson is because... in the spirit of players that have just made me want to wring their bloody necks, he is the opposite of Alexander Butner. In that Butner was fucking dreadful, but you had a feeling like he couldn't be any better than what he was doing. Like he physically couldn't do any better. Anderson is one of the most talented football players I've ever seen. And there are so many reports of training sessions that he ran on his own as a 20-year-old kid. He's a former Golden Boy winner. He is an incredibly talented player who just had an okay career at United because he was fat as fuck and just loved partying. And that in itself is somehow more frustrating, where you go, for the love of God, can you just eat less burgers? Why is that not a problem? You're a professional athlete, you fat fuck. Just try for a decade and you'll be set for life. Do this at 40. Do this shit at 40. Yeah, he. There's so many reports of him. Just his attitude was just done, and it's a shame because, like I say, so talented.
Do you know what? I'm looking up now, seeing what he looks like. He actually looks in better condition now that he's joined this. I don't know when this was from, but it's X-Man United midfielder Anderson joins Turkish second tier club. He actually looks, I think, in better shape now than he did back then.
Oh, fuck off. Really?
Yeah. Where's this from? Of course, Brazilian player joined Adana Demisora. And this is from, when was this? This is 2018, so things might have changed since then. He might have had a lockdown, might have chilled and had some... so how would he be doing? He's 34 now. But yeah, this time here, I think he looks better than he did in his time at Man United.
Well, I mean, I sort of, when he joined the club, he was this skinny kid who had so much bags of ability. So many, you know, he was so talented with the ball at his feet. He was somebody who could really do everything. He great passer of the ball, had great vision. He had a calmness about him. He was great in a tackle, but also he could take players on for fun. He was everything you'd want in a midfielder. And yet his career just went okay. And it could have gone. I honestly believe that Anderson could have been, if he'd have had the work ethic of Ronaldo, he would be talked about as one of the best players that we've ever seen in the Premier League.
I do remember when he signed, you're absolutely right, there was a big hype around it because there weren't many Brazilian players in the Premier League back then. And for a Brazilian player to come to to Man United. It's back then when a Brazilian played. Go, ooh, Brazil. Oh, this is going to be exciting. And there was a big hype around him. And then still seeing him years later going, oh, that, it's him. Still going. Still there.
Well, I mean, he's a former Golden Boy winner as well. And obviously, you know, he won the Golden Boy in 2008. So,
and that's quite late on, really, when he was already... I wouldn't have said he was necessarily a first-team player back then, either. He was kind of bringing him on 65 minutes in.
He would have been like a youth player, but he would have been, like... He would have been insanely good. He would have been insanely good. Like, it's just... It's so frustrating with ones like that, players like that, where you... It's not even like, as well, it's not even like they were just sort of like, it's not even like they were flops. He was a really good player. And you're talking, you know, the people that had won it before him were like Rooney, Messi, Fabregas, Aguero, Anderson. You look at all the players who'd won it before him. You know, they all went on to be up there with the best. He was really, I think, the first flop, you know? And I think you've got to say that it's just so frustrating to watch a player with all that ability only reach a third of what he could have done.
Yeah. It's one of those things as well, because I suppose being part of the squad, he still collected his medals. He can still say, oh, yeah, you know, Premier League titles, Champions League. What more do you want? But I know what you mean. He could have been that good.
He wasn't a bad player by any means, but he could have been the talisman. He could have been the team that we built everybody around. You know?
Yeah. Especially in his position. So that's we've got Barthez, we've got Butner, we've got Anderson, we've got two more players. Who you got for us, Freddie?
We're going to go with Alexis Sanchez.
Okay, Sanchez, he's in.
Honestly, I'm still waiting for the player that I thought we were going to get when we signed him. Unbelievable. We signed a player that was one of the best players in the Premier League for the last 3 years, and he just... The second that he turned up at Old Trafford, do you know what it's like? Have you ever seen the Disney film Hercules?
I have actually. Yeah.
You know when Hercules makes a deal with the devil. Well, the devil Hades, bloody, you know, and he loses his powers for 24 hours.
Yeah,
and he just turns shit. That I feel like that's what happened with Sanchez. Like, he made a deal where he said, I'll go to Old Trafford and earn 600 grand a week. And they went, but we're going to turn your shit. And he went, yeah, no problem at all. It was like getting a player who would, and the things that he was famous for, the tenacity, the running around and stuff, just didn't bother. And then every once in a while, he'd do something fucking class. A pass or a goal or just even a run that just let you know that the old player was still trapped in there somewhere. Oh God, but he was maddening to watch. Absolutely infuriating.
And people forget, I think, how big his signing was. It was huge when he came over from Arsenal. He'd had such an amazing career there. I think people thought it was going to be... I mean, I suppose some comparisons were made about when Van Persie came over, but I suppose Van Persie's... Yeah. Maybe his best days were behind him then, but he still came in enough to do enough and to win a title with them. But Sanchez was the top of his game. It was almost like he's not even in his prime yet. And we have... You know, it felt like this is the old Man United now, picking up players like Cantona, like Roy Keane, before they've hit their pinnacle. So it was so exciting to bring him in, but then just nothing.
Nothing at all, nothing. There were a couple of really good performances. I remember an FA Cup semi-final against Tottenham where he was exceptional. But by and large, it was just like he didn't want to be there. And it's so frustrating to watch because, again, you know that there's a great player locked in there somewhere. Because I've seen him for 3 years and you don't turn shit overnight.
Yeah.
I'm still wondering what the hell happened to him.
Yeah. It's very strange. It was a very strange situation to the point where I almost feel like his bad time at Man United affected his Arsenal legacy. It's almost like he's more well known for being the player who moved and was shit than he was remembered from his original Arsenal time. I mean, you got like Torres. Torres had a bit of a struggle at Chelsea, but still got an important goal in the Champions League. And you sort of think, well, it doesn't matter what he did at Chelsea because he's still a legend at Liverpool. I genuinely feel like sort of generic Premier people who watch the Premier League think Sanchez, that guy who went to United and was so shit. So shit.
Yeah. And the thing is he ran the Premier League for 3 years.
Yeah.
He ran it. He was one of the best players. 20 goal a season striker, minimum, in an Arsenal team that were fucking poo.
So we've got, I'm sure as you've said, it's a team of players who frustrate you, and I'm sure every Man United fan would agree with Sanchez. But who's your final addition to this fantasy five-a-side cult-like team?
It was a toss-up between Radamel Falcao and Cavani, but I think I'm going to go with Cavani.
Right, okay, Cavani. That's interesting because I feel like he had quite a good season, even the season before. As in,
this is what frustrates me about him.
Yeah.
He is constantly crippled. He's just, honestly, the guy can play about 50, 60 minutes and then he's done. Also, as well, I think that he wanted to leave Old Trafford this season and go back to, at the beginning of this season, and go back to Argentina. I think there was talk of him going to play for Boca, and we convinced him to stay for one more season to sort of help us out, and there's just nothing. And it's a shame because I really like Cavani as a player and I love when he plays, but he has been so absent when we've needed him. He's been so, so absent. Mate, at the start of the season, he missed 6 games because he was like, I'm just in Argentina. And we were like, all right, okay, cool. When are you coming back? He was like, all right, like a few weeks maybe. I'm just in Argentina because I'm a bit sad. Cool. All right, nice.
Imagine that under Fergie. Wouldn't happen.
No, absolutely not. Not a chance in hell. It's a shame, really, because I know that Cavani, I mean, every United fan knows he doesn't want to be there, but he's so talented. Oh, my God, I would love to have seen Cavani at Old Trafford when Cavani was 30. I would have loved to have seen it because he's just got an instinct unlike anybody else. He can finish with both feet. He can head. He runs. He works his socks off. But his body's just fucked and he don't want to live in England no more. And he sure as hell doesn't want to play for us. And that's what almost makes it so. His one good season as well was in lockdown, so he couldn't even really hear an Old Trafford crowd.
Yeah, that's true. That's when it was. It was the lockdown 2019-2020 season. So that's your team then, Freddie, a team who have frustrated you over your year supporting them. We've got Fabian Barthez, Alexander Butner, we've got Anderson, we've got Sanchez and Cavani. And because it's a team that particularly annoy you, I'm going to ask you one more question. That is, if you could give them any manager, and that's a Man United manager and your time supporting them who's frustrated the hell out of you, who would you make manager of that team?
Oh, wow. I was going to give it to Paul Pogba in a managerial role just to see what he could. Who's the manager that's frustrating me the most? I'm going to say Van Gaal. Because Louis van Gaal had this thing with van Gaal is that we'd never get turned over. I can't remember us losing a goal, a game by more than 2 goals with van Gaal. It had just never happened. But fuck me, was it the most boring football in the world. And also as well, he had this thing, this bizarre thing where he could look at a player who had played in a certain position their whole lives and he'd go, nope. I see you as this, you know, like There was a time when he played. There's a time when he played Di Maria, an out and out winger. Played him as a centre mid for a bit in like a midfield three, and it's like, what? What are you doing? What the hell are you doing? It just, you've got a really great winger. Just play him on the fucking wing. Why are we doing this? So yeah, I'd have Van Hall. Van Hall would probably play some mad formation. He'd probably play Sanchez as a wing back or something like that. Yeah, that'd be my five-a-side team.
Love it. Absolutely love it, Freddie. And it's a great way to end. Thank you so much for coming on the podcast, mate. Really, really appreciate it.
No worries. See you soon. Bye.
Cheers, mate.
Thanks again to Freddie for coming on the podcast. What an honour to have him on. Do find him on social media. He's very easy to find. He's got the same handle across everything, apparently. He's TikTok, Instagram, Twitter. It's at Freddie with a Y, Quinn, Q-U-I-N-N-E. And as I said, do check out their podcast as well, Dead Men Talking Podcast, that he presents with Rob Mulholland. It's brilliant. Really, really good. And worth signing up to their Patreon as well. Not that I have, but they've got loads of extra stuff on there. There's a living crisis on. Don't judge me. Anyway, if you enjoyed the podcast, there's loads of other episodes you can go back to listen to. And if you like the podcast, why not follow us on all the socials? I say all the socials. We're only on two, Twitter and Instagram. Just search at ComTalkFootyPod. You can follow me on Instagram and Facebook. I'm Sam Michael UK. Until then, the very least you can do, if you enjoyed the podcast, just tell your friends about it. Anyway, until next time, when our guest will be Harvey Hawkins, thanks very much for listening, and I'll see you next week. Until then, take care.
Football. At the end of the day. Football. It's a funny old game.
Give it to us.
Comedians talking about football.
Comedians talking about football.
Comedians talking about football.
Sports Social Podcast Network.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.